This is Xavier Rose. You listen to the Wobcast, hosted by Wobby.
Welcome back. It's another edition of the Wobcast. I'm your host, Mike Wobshall, coming to you from TCO Studios at Winter Park. Producer Nate Vaughn is by my side. We got a pep in our step because your Minnesota Vikings are 4-0 after a fun and convincing 24-10 victory over the New York Giants on Monday Night Football. Last week, the Vikings moved to 4-0. They're undefeated in their new building. They held Odell Beckham Jr. to a career low 23 receiving yards. And that is the subject of our first weekly recap talking point from this week as the Vikings have prepared for their game against the Houston Texans. We'll get into that in a minute, but I want to tell you later in the show, we have lots of fun stuff. We have a lofty comparison for your Vikings defense. Of course, the weekly player we should be talking about segment, some fan mail, and then Nate and I will play some over-unders, and we'll get into three threats from the Houston Texans. But before we get into all that, let's go over some of the talking points from this week as the Vikings geared up for the Houston Texans. As I said, we'll start with Odell Beckham Jr. Nate, I didn't say hello to you, but hi, how are you?
Hello, Wobby. I'm well. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great. We're doing better than Odell Beckham Jr. did against the Vikings on Monday Night Football. That's for sure.
It would appear that way.
Yeah. The Vikings defense kept Odell Beckham Jr. as a league-wide talker this week. Of course, going into the game, there was much talk about OBJ's on-field exploits, particularly some of the tussles he's gotten into with Josh Norman over their last couple of matchups on the field. Of course, we saw Josh Norman get involved with a kicking net on the sidelines at MetLife Stadium. And so Odell Beckham Jr. has been a talker, and it remains that way after the Vikings did a number on him on Monday Night Football, holding him to a career low 23 receiving yards and shutting him out in the second half. Odell Beckham Jr., a great player, on a historic pace early in his career. So don't get us wrong here. We're not trash-talking OBJ. He's a great player, but the Vikings had their way with him and the rest of the Giants offense on Monday night. During the effort, Odell Beckham Jr. and Xavier Rhodes got into a couple of confrontations, one of which resulted in a 15-yard penalty on Odell Beckham Jr. That led to some sound bites from Odell after the game and the day after the game about not having fun anymore, something I think has been a common theme for a lot of the offensive players who have gone against the Vikings defense. Mm-hmm. And it's led to the media keeping this story on the front burner. But now, suddenly, we become Odell Beckham Jr. fans. You know why?
Why is that?
Well, do you know where the Giants play this week?
A fellow NFC North Division member.
They do. The Giants go to Lambeau Field for Sunday Night Football this week. So hopefully we're going to beat the Texans on Sunday afternoon. We're going to get all of our work done at the stadium. We're going to hustle home, get into our sweatpants, sit on the couch, pop on the game, and we're going to hopefully watch Odell Beckham Jr. light up the Green Bay Packers. That would be a lot of fun. And look who's just walked into the studio.
What's going on?
Voice of the Vikings, Paul Allen.
I saw a microphone, man. I mean, you know me, it's a microphone or a camera. I got to attack it.
We just got going talking about what happened last week against the Giants. We have not gotten into the preview of the Houston Texans, but we just were talking about how Mike Zimmer did yet another number on a talented offensive player in the NFL, something he's been doing all season.
Yeah, and this week, obviously, it's DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller. You know, there are, I think, three or four receivers in the history of the NFL as rookies. I know Randy Moss and Anquan Boldin are two of them, who amassed more than 1,200 receiving yards as rookies. Fuller is on pace for more than 1,200 yards.
Wow.
So Texans fans, if they want to talk trash, Texans trash, they would say, y'all came to the game worried about DeAndre Hopkins and left talking about Will Fuller. So that's, as the kids would say, that's definitely a thing.
Okay, something to watch out for. Now, how sweet will it be, though, after a victory over the Texans?
Am I clomping?
No. We're glad you stopped in.
Sweet.
Thanks for doing that.
Uh-huh.
After we beat the Texans, we get to go home and kick our feet up and That'd watch nice. Sunday Night Football. And you know what's going on Sunday Night Football?
Yeah, you have us all of a sudden rooting against a team on a Monday and loving a team on
right.
a Sunday.
Yes, we get to watch the Giants go to Lambeau Field, and hopefully Odell Beckham Jr. gets some redemption.
I just hope he gets out emotionally alive.
I think he will.
I do, too.
You can't – I mean, that – if he doesn't, that would be five straight games without a touchdown for Odell Beckham Jr.
That can't happen. Feels like he's going to score three.
Feels like that cannot happen. The next talking point that I was going to get into that now you can comment on.
Oh.
It's only four games.
Yes, Wobby.
Really just three games. But bravo to Rick Spielman on the Sam Bradford trade.
Oh, no doubt. You know, when the when it went down that Saturday morning, kind of like the Andrus and Dejo deal in the offseason, is fans looked at the immediacy of it and they're like, are you kidding me? A first-round pick. Well, a couple of things here, like with the Sendejo deal, they looked at the 4 years and the full number. And, I mean, Andrew's playing well this year, but actually getting all those years and all that money, I feel was a stretch. So, nevertheless, with the Bradford thing, they looked at the first-round pick, and then, you know, people just immediately, the first thing they thought was he always gets hurt. Then you do a little bit more of a deep dive on it, and you recognize that he's never had a season with more interceptions than touchdowns. Very good in the preseason for Philly this year, and very good for Philly at the end of last year. And then now you see what he's done through three games, so much so that Elite Football Mind Peter King from Sports Illustrated proclaimed him the MVP of the NFL through the first four games of the season. So that was phenomenal. You know, and regarding the first-round pick, if you look at the slow burn with Trey Waynes and subsequently the same thing with Laquon Treadwell, I mean, yeah, I hope the Vikings end up with a first-round pick, but given first-round picks aren't required to jump in here and help immediately because the team's good, then that doesn't really bug me that much, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you. Another cool thing about this trade, and speaking of Elite Football Minds, John Gruden, we're going to hear a soundbite from him right now talking about the fact that the Vikings are undefeated with a quarterback that they acquired 8 days before the regular season. The Eagles, who gave up that quarterback, are also undefeated, going with a quarterback that they named their starter 8 days before the season. Here's what John Gruden had to say.
As an offensive-minded coach, particularly in your work with quarterbacks and offense, how about getting a quarterback 8 days before the season starts and having to work him in? What were your observations on how the Vikings did that?
You've never heard of this before, where you lose your starting quarterback the week before the first regular season game. But it's odd. I mean, Philadelphia and Minnesota execute a trade. They both have different opening day starters. They're both 3-0. That just shows you where this world is right now in terms of football. But give Norv Turner, a man with a lot of experience, credit. I'm sure Shermer had a lot to do with it, with his familiarity with Sam. So it was a natural. They gave up a lot to get him. And so far, they've proved very smart for making this deal because Sam looks good.
All right, another one I want you to comment on, because you've talked about this on your radio show and during the game broadcast, Jeff Locke. Stay hot, Jeff Locke.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. He's been absolutely phenomenal, specifically in that the Vikings defense is establishing itself as one of the best defenses in the history of this team. And when you throw something like that out after four games, I'm going to you would raise your eyebrows. I would raise my eyebrow because this is a team that has been in business for 50 to 60 years. And, you know, there was a little thing 40 years ago called the Purple People Eaters that are football immortality.
Respect.
But when you permit an adversary 17 or fewer points, eight consecutive games, the way this team has, for the first time in 40 years, then you are entering that conversation. And then you look, okay, so you can look at that and say, okay, that's cool. Yep, very good, but how good? Then you look at the quarterbacks they've seen during that time. Aaron Rodgers twice. I believe Carson Palmer once, maybe, maybe not, though. Eli Manning twice. Russell Wilson, Cam Newton. I mean, you've seen the best of the best during that streak. So this defense is on to something potentially historically good.
A perfect segue to what we were going to discuss next, which is a lofty comparison for the Minnesota Vikings defense done by our friends at the NFL Network. They have a discussion of, are the Vikings this year comparable to the 1985 Bears? Take a listen.
All right, here are the numbers I was telling you about, the numbers that may surprise you. We are going to make the ridiculous leap of comparing these Vikings to the 1985 legendary Bears. And the numbers compare very favorably. As a matter of fact, these numbers are downright shocking. Granted, it is only four games. And I'll be honest with you, when we brought these numbers up in a meeting today, I said there's no way we should put that on the screen. It's the 85 Bears, for Pete's sake. And then I saw the numbers and I went, whoa, those numbers are pretty interesting. Charlie Casserly, Mike Garofolo with us here on Up to the Minute. Charlie, that's a pretty good defense we saw last night.
Oh, it is. Yeah, you know, I think it's a very good defense. I would rate Denver ahead of them. right now, and I'd rate Seattle ahead of them, but that's a very good defense, and they're good at all the levels. That's what makes them good.
What made them good last night? What did you see, whether it's a pass rush or what they did to Odell Beckham?
Well, it starts with Beckham, and it was simple what they did. They put Rhodes on and put a safety over the top. That's what they did for most of the game, and that takes Beckham out of the reads. Even though Beckham does get open, the quarterback's not looking for him at that point in time. But at every level, Linville Joseph stuffed the run. Okay, so you have him there. You got Griffin coming from the outside, putting pressure on the quarterback. You got two inside linebackers, Barr and Kendricks. Both of them are really good players. And then I talked about Rhodes doing his job, but also Munyerling and Newman. They're good corners. They're not really number one corners at this point in their career, but they're pretty good corners. That's a pretty good 1-3 combination. Harrison Smith is a terrific player. But I think it started with Odell Beckham and limiting to him. When you hold him to, what, 23 yards?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to beat the Giants every time.
Yeah, pretty impressive the way Terrence Newman was running with him in the fourth quarter, considering Terrence Newman is practically as old as I am.
All right, Paul, we're going to keep you here because this is fun.
Excellent.
This is a nice surprise. Every week on the Wobcast, we have a segment called Player We Should Be Talking About.
Mm-hmm.
So it's we're going to laud a player who's mm-hmm. not getting much attention, not getting the attention that he deserves.
Yep.
In past episodes this season, it's been Cordarrelle Patterson. Mm-hmm. It's been Jeff Locke. This week, it's an offensive lineman. It's one who has started every game this season for your Vikings,
wow.
and it's one who's playing much better the last 2 weeks.
We're on the same page.
No one's talking about him, but yeah. they should be, because right now he's on a string of two straight games. Who is it?
Yeah, it's Brandon Fusco.
Yes.
We're absolutely on the same page, because I thought you were going to ask me who I would bring up, and mm-hmm. that's where I was going to go.
Sweet. Okay, yeah, Brandon Fusco. He spoke in the locker room this week, and you know Brandon. He's soft-spoken.
Yep.
Not going to
happy-go-lucky.
Yes, not going to praise himself a bunch. He's going to keep everything at kind of an arm's distance. So, and that's what he did in this soundbite.
You individually, I mean, your best game in a while. Is that safe to
yeah,
say?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's hard to say that. I try to come week in, week out, have my best game. So, yeah, I guess it was a good game for me, I feel like. But I could build off that and just keep playing the way I am, I guess.
Brandon obviously will not concede that was his best game of the season, but will you?
No, I won't. I think it was very good, but I believe the previous game mm-hmm. was his best game of the season,
okay.
the game at Carolina, because the Kawan Short Challenge to some may not be Mike Daniels or Jarrell Casey-esque, but I don't think Brandon played well. In fact, Brandon, after the Packers game, you know, a game the Vikings obviously won, was despondent in that he felt he was beaten a majority of the game. And he's a very prideful individual, and he was very upset. And, you know, then you move on to the next week, which is Carolina with Star Latulele and Kawan Short and Paul Solei and the rookie Vernon Butler from Louisiana Tech. So that's a quartet of tough players. And he outplayed all of them basically every play of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And why I say that was his best effort of the season is because when you keep stringing together games like Tennessee and Green Bay, where the offensive line coach, the coordinator, maybe the head coach are like, come on, what's happening here? You have to worry about the immediacy of your job. So those who respond to an adversarial situation the way he has, I just have the immense amount of respect for.
For the Vikings running game as a whole, they get over the 100-yard mark,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, quite frankly, was nothing to brag about in previous years with Adrian,
right.
but right now it is. Given the way they started and the fact that Adrian's not running and all the injuries along the offensive line, that was a step forward, plus, more importantly, two rushing touchdowns. And if you look historically, I do not have the exact number. It used to be, I think, in the high 70%. But historically, if you rush for two touchdowns in a game, your chances of winning said game are very high.
Wow.
Usually 75 or 80%.
Yeah.
So that was a cool thing.
Yeah, but you know what? The rushing yards per game is still last in the NFL.
Yes.
The rushing per attempt is 2.5, which is absurdly low,
mm-hmm.
and it has to get better. It's last in the NFL. Now, to win this week, I firmly believe you do have to run for 100 or more, have some explosive runs, and give the play action merit. Because, you know, I don't, and the coaches know 1,000 times more about this than me, but Houston has not allowed a passing touchdown all year. So then you do a deeper dive into how they're doing it. And with Romeo Crennel, the way he's scheming this thing for the Texans, Whitney Mercilus, Jadeveon Clowney, Brian Cushing to a certain extent, Vince Wilfork, from what I hear, is playing as well as he's played in the last 10 years.
Dang.
They come at you from different angles, and they're good at it. So therefore, it feels like you're going to have to get rid of the ball quickly in this game, and it might not be a lot of deep stuff down the field. So I think the best way to pass into what looks impenetrable to some is to have Merritt with your running game. I think the running game for me is probably the topic in this game, with hitting Osweiler and making him throw it to you being right behind it.
Okay, let me ask you a follow-up on that. Mm-hmm. Let's say that, you know, we've seen Mike Zimmer take away the other team's best option consistently. Let's say someone's able to do that to the Vikings. So, and let's say Romeo Crennel decides it's Stephon Diggs. And so for whatever the reason is on mm-hmm. Sunday, Stephon Diggs is not a factor for us. Who is most capable of stepping up and being a guy for Sam Bradford?
Well, for me, the number one guy to take away in this offense with the way the Texans do it is Kyle Rudolph. Mm. Because I think you can damage the Texans in the middle of the field with Rudolph easier than expecting Diggs, who's mispracticed this week, to have his way with Jonathan Joseph or Kareem Jackson. Kareem Jackson, in my opinion, is the best cornerback on their team. Joseph is in his 30s. He's still good. He's crafty. He's kind of like their Terrence Newman. Kareem Jackson's a stud. He's a lot better than I thought until I looked more deeply into it this week. So I would focus on Rudolph, because clearly Bradford is looking for Rudolph at key times of games, yeah. And Kyle's coming through.
I believe, you know, he had 5 receptions against the Giants. 4 of those 5 were on third down.
Wow.
And 4 of his 5 receptions were good for a touchdown or for a first down.
Yeah.
And he also drew a key defensive pass interference call against the Giants. So Rudy has been good in the clutch, no doubt about it.
You know, I like their pass rush. I like their corners. I'm not super big on their safeties, and I'm not sure their linebackers are at their best covering. I think they're at their best slowing the run. Secondly, to pass rushing. Whitney Mercilus is a very, very good pass rusher.
And you are very, very good at talking about the Vikings.
Aw, thank you. I'm going to run and talk to the head coach about this Wobcast, make sure he approves.
Good.
And we will chat soon. Thanks
Sounds
for having
good.
Me.
You bet. See you, PA.
Bye, Nathan.
Bye, Paul. That was nice of him.
Yeah. I mean, when you can get the voice of the Vikings to stop by and chat with you for a while, you take that. I mean, that's cool.
The voice. I mean, the mic, like he said, right. He saw a microphone, he's gravitated yeah, towards it.
That's right. And his voice sounds good in the microphone, right?
It does. I mean, better than mine.
We don't have that voice.
We don't.
That's...
But I'm going to use my voice to read you some fan questions.
Okay. I'll
How
use mine.
That? How about that transition?
That was good. I'll use mine to answer said fan questions.
All right. The All first right. of those fan questions is from Josh from St. Anthony, Minnesota.
Okay.
Josh says, do you think with all the injuries, our O-line is our Achilles heel with Bradford getting pressured at the second highest rate in the NFL? And the fact that we have the lowest yards per carry of any team in the NFL, do you foresee Spielman being proactive and picking any O linemen up before it actually becomes a bigger problem?
Well, I don't think the Vikings have any choice. They're going to have to do a little bit of moving and shaking at offensive line because the injuries are starting to add up. Now you have Andre Smith, who's hurt, on top of Alex Boone being banged up, on top of missing Matt Khalil because he's on IR. So I don't know that it's going to be a big household name that we've all heard of, but I mean, they're going to be forced to do some moving and shaking. And they got into that a little bit last week when they promoted Willie Beavers from the practice squad to the active roster. So, yes, I do foresee Spielman being proactive or active by making some moves along the offensive line, but I do not see it being a big-time name. But I also don't see it becoming a big-time problem. I actually think it's going the right way right now. I think the offensive line is progressing. I think what we saw against the Giants was great news and was a step forward. With that being said, it was against the Giants defense that was missing some key players and has not been performing great. If they look as good or better against the Houston defense, then we know we're on to something.
Question number 2 from Nicholas.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing effort tonight. I assume we sent this after the game.
He did, yep.
A late night email, probably.
Well,
the game gets over.
These fans are dedicated now. Yeah. They'll email me at all hours of the day and night.
So Nicholas mm-hmm. couldn't get sleep because he was thinking about the amazing effort on both sides of the ball.
Nicholas is a regular emailer.
All right.
Yes.
He said he was impressed by Jerick McKinnon never giving up and going for extra yards. He also said it was nice to see Cordero play the way he did.
Mm-hmm.
But he has one question, and that's where's Ronnie Hillman?
Okay. Agree with him on Jerick, and in fact, so did John Gruden, named Jerick McKinnon his Gruden grinder for Monday night. Agree with Nicholas on Cordero. Fun to see him involved. when it comes to Ronnie Hillman, the thing to remember, listen, this is Ronnie Hillman, who was the Broncos' leading rusher last year, and the Wobcast has learned the Broncos won the Super Bowl last year. So you have the leading rusher from last year's Super Bowl winner. That's a big deal. But remember, you acquired this running back, Ronnie Hillman, in the middle of the season. So Ronnie has to learn the Vikings offense, which is going to be new to him, and he's got to do it while he's not getting a bunch of practice reps, because you're not going to take practice reps away from your starters and your backup to give to a guy who's trying to learn the offense. You only have 3 days of practice during the week to get ready for the game. You're not going to take reps away from your starters. So it's an uphill climb for Ronnie to learn the offense. Now, once he does learn the offense, I think that he can help you. I think he's a good pass protector. I think he's good in the run game and the pass game, and he gives you some depth. So it's good that we have Ronnie Hillman, but it's gonna take a little while for him to get up to speed with this offense.
Jeff from Sacramento says it was a great team win.
No doubt.
Lots of those positive emails. That's what we like now.
Well, when you're 4-0, you get those.
He says the team is firing on all cylinders except for one.
Uh-oh.
He's a little bit concerned. He says Coach Zimmer, for the first time in his post-game press conference, expressed a question mark regarding his confidence in Blair Walsh.
Mm-hmm.
He said, no one has missed more kicks for points. At what point do you decide to make a change? To be clear, Jeff is not advocating for that change yet. He's just curious about what point you do.
Yeah, and I'm with Jeff. I would not advocate for a change either. I mean, listen, here's the deal. You're not dealing with a kicker who you're not sure if he can get the job done or not. You know that Blair can get the job done. He's gotten it done at a high level. He's been a Pro Bowler. I think that he was the best or one of the best kickers as a rookie in 2012. So Blair's been getting the job done at a high level for his career. He's made a lot of clutch kicks, and he's been very good from distance. He's also a great kickoff specialist. So I know right now the climate or the mood is a little down on Blair because he missed another field goal on Monday night. But the good news is it's a guy who can get the job done, and now it's just a matter of getting back on track as opposed to not having a solution in-house at the kicking position. That would be a much worse scenario to be in. So I think that what you want is stability, consistency, and excellence at the kicking position. And right now, your best chance to get that is with Blair Walsh, as opposed to bringing someone else in here who's never been here, and you got to start over with somebody. So I'm sticking with Blair Walsh. I'm glad the team is, and I think he gives the Vikings their best chance of having a solid situation at kicker.
From one sort of question mark to something that is appearing to not be a question at all,
mm-hmm.
our pass defense, specifically Xavier Rhodes.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't sure if he would follow Odell Beckham Jr. around all game. Turns out he did most of the game.
Yeah.
And really, I mean, if you saw the game, you know that he shut him down. So that was fun to watch.
Super fun to watch. And he got an interception.
Interception, pass breakup. He was in Odell Beckham's grill all night.
Yeah, and you saw some attitude from him too. You saw a little a little spunk out of Xavier. Now, Xavier's a quiet-going kind of guy. He's big and strong and physical, and he loves football, but he's also a quiet-going, sweet guy around the building. So I love seeing the competitive juices flowing for him against Odell Beckham Jr. I never thought Xavier jumped out of his skin or did something wrong or something out of character or undisciplined. I thought he looked like he was executing the game plan perfectly, and the interception he got was well-deserved.
And it's cool to see him kind of get a little bit of the spotlight going through some of the broadcasts. Yeah. John Gruden was talking a lot about him. A lot of times, you know, your best corner doesn't get much action because the other team knows it's your best corner, so they don't even go to him. But on Monday night, at least, he was getting some recognition that I think he probably deserves.
And much deserved, because if Odell would have gone, you know, 8 catches for 110 yards and 2 touchdowns, people would be shredding whoever was guarding him.
Right.
So the attention, the credit, well-deserved. Glad to see Xavier get it. Now, I will also say, it's a team effort to do what the Vikings did to the Giants, right? I mean, obviously Eli and the Giants were concerned about the Vikings' pass rush. So although the Vikings had 0 sacks, the pass rush still had an impact on the game because it affected how the Giants operated. I thought that there was outstanding athleticism displayed by Eric Kendricks and Anthony Barr on the second level, helping guard some of those underneath routes and squeezing tighter some of the zones and angles underneath. And I thought that Harrison Smith and Anderson Dejo did a great job helping out in coverage as well. So a good team effort by the Vikings to slow down what can be a potent Giants passing attack. But Xavier Rhodes, outstanding job when he was with Odell, no doubt.
Vikings pass rush and defensive backs will be defending against threat number one today in this week's three threats, DeAndre Hopkins. You mentioned earlier Will Fuller, or Paul actually talked about it a little bit. Will Fuller might be just as worrisome for the Vikings defense, but I mean, he's still DeAndre Hopkins. He's still got to consider what he is and what he can do.
The full package at wide receiver, had 1,500 receiving yards last year. He can take over a game. He wins 50-50 balls more than 50% of the time. A guy you have to watch out for. Good on screens, good down the field, good blocker, will be on the field nearly every snap. Number one threat for an offense that is not afraid to air it out.
Threat number two, I guess I just kind of ruined it, but it's Will Fuller.
The aforementioned Will Fuller actually has more receptions, yards, and touchdowns this year than DeAndre Hopkins. 17.0 yards per catch, 19 catches, 2 touchdowns. 7 of his 19 catches are for more than 20 yards. He also has a punt return touchdown. His number one trait is speed. And for those loyal and longtime listeners of the Wobcast, you know that producer Nate Vaughn loved him some Will Fuller in the build-up to the draft.
Well, I think a lot of people did. Yeah. I wasn't the only one.
Well, I'm just trying to give you some credit because you were on him.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, you did like him. So did Houston, and we can see why. Yeah.
Finally, threat number three, Bernardrick McKinney.
Yeah. You know, Paul mentioned a handful of Houston defenders who were good and who can impact the game. He did not mention McKinney. I will right here, though. Middle linebacker or inside linebacker in the Texans 3-4 defense has 2 sacks this year. He is their leading tackler. He has a forced fumble, and he is a 3-down defender. He's been on the field for all 71 of the Texans' third down snaps. And in this day and age, when you have sub packages and moving parts on the roster, a 3-down defender is a big deal.
All right, let's do some quick over-unders.
Yes.
DeAndre Hopkins, we talked about him a lot already. Receptions for Mr. Hopkins, 5.5 over or under.
Yeah. Well, we know that Mike Zimmer listens to the Wobcast, so I'm not taking over on this because he'll get mad. But even if he wasn't listening to the Wobcast, I would still take the under on this. There's no way that you can be confident in saying Hopkins is going to catch 6 balls against this Vikings defense, given what Mike Zimmer has done to Jordy Nelson, Kelvin Benjamin, and the Giants' 3-headed attack at wide receiver in the last month or so. So I'm under on this.
Kyle Rudolph has been a touchdown machine the past few games.
Yes.
Will he have one this game?
Yes.
We'll put the over under at 0.5. You say yes?
So then I'm over on that as well. I think it'll be 4 straight games with a touchdown for Kyle Rudolph, approaching Steve Jordan's record for the Vikings, touchdowns by a tight end. And I think Kyle Rudolph is a threat to one day hold the single season record for touchdowns by a tight end. I think he can get to 11 or even more and be that record holder as well.
We talked about turnovers for your Vikings defense. So how many times will they force turnovers for the Houston Texans? We'll put the over under at 1.5.
So you got to get to 2 if you want to take the over. I think that the Vikings can do that against this team. I think that if you get Brock Osweiler into predictable situations the way you did with Eli Manning, Osweiler will do what Manning doesn't do, and that is rush things and make mistakes. Manning did a good job of taking care of the ball. He did throw the pick to Xavier Rhodes, but by and large, he did a good job of not taking sacks. He took 0 and taking care of the ball in general with just one turnover for the Giants offense. I don't think Osweiler is as polished or well-seasoned, so I think that the Vikings will force more than 1.5 turnovers.
A few stats to talk about, stats that are fun because we're 4-0, and there's more good stats when you win more games.
What's trending?
The Vikings, probably.
Yes, they should be. I think the biggest trend right now, other than the quarterback for the Vikings offense, is something that PA mentioned earlier, is Kyle Rudolph. Now has a touchdown in 3 straight games. He's approaching the Vikings' all-time touchdown record by a tight end, which is Steve Jordan. He's 3 away. And another one here against the Texans would be awesome and would not surprise me. It's not the easiest team in the world against which to pass, but the Vikings are doing that very well. Sam Bradford is making the right decisions the vast majority of the time, and Kyle Rudolph has kind of been his man in the clutch and definitely his man in the middle of the field, which is where you can go to attack this defense through the air. So Kyle Rudolph is trending with a touchdown in 3 straight games. I think it will remain that way in Week 5 against the Texans.
You talked about success for us passing the ball. Mm-hmm. There hasn't been much success for the opposing team passing the ball against us.
Yes. What's trending is not opponent passer ratings against the Vikings. It's certainly not trending up. It's trending down. Here are the numbers, Nate. Week 1, 86.5 for Mariota. Week 2, 70.7 for Aaron Rodgers. Week 3, 63.3 for Cam Newton. And, of course, last week against Eli Manning, 47.6. So Mike Zimmer doing a number on some of these quarterbacks, many of whom are very well decorated, have played in Super Bowls, have won Super Bowls. Passer ratings are trending down against the Minnesota Vikings.
Finally, the Vikings, one thing that they didn't really do as well last year, they had a good defense, but the turnovers weren't always there.
That's true.
That's different this year.
Much different this year. In fact, the Vikings lead the NFL in takeaways. The Vikings are first in the NFL in turnover margin as well. So they lead the NFL with 11 takeaways. Their turnover margin is plus 10. The reason it's not plus 11, even though the offense hasn't turned it over, is Andrew Sendejo actually lost a fumble after the Vikings defense created a turnover, which is kind of weird. The only other team without a giveaway on offense is also undefeated. Probably not a coincidence. It's the Philadelphia Eagles. It also helps that they've only played in three games and not four, but they're a team that's taking care of the ball as well. So that's what's trending for your Minnesota Vikings. All of them are good for your Minnesota Vikings. Hopefully, it will all be good on Sunday for the Vikings as they battle the AFC South leading Houston Texans. The Texans are 3-1. The Vikings are 4-0. So a couple of teams who are doing most of the things the right way will battle at US Bank Stadium. On behalf of producer Nate Vaughn, we thank Voice of the Vikings Paul Allen for making an impromptu appearance, and we thank you for listening. I'm your host, Mike Wobshaw. This edition of the Wobcast is over. Enjoy the game on Sunday. We'll talk to you next week.